It's time for Sweet Home Cannabama, a show that'll answer all your questions, provide accurate information, and dispel the myths of CBD. You can participate and have your specific questions answered by emailing sweethomecannabama.com. And now for all things cannabis in Alabama, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Jennifer Boozer. I'm your host and the owner and founder of Cannabama, the CBD store here in Mobile, Alabama. We're located at 558 St. Francis Street in downtown Mobile, just one block up from Wenzel's on Dauphin Street and next to the Delta Bike Project. If you need historical landmarks to get you there, you can Google us. Our phone number is 251-255-5155. If you'd like to call and ask some questions or schedule some time for a consultation with me. And our website is www.cannabama.com. That's CannaBama.com. You can shop online, learn about us, send us messages, get that Google map you're looking for, and find some really great products and information. So we try to upload as much new information as we can. So we look forward to getting visits from you guys there. But as always, we love to see you down at the store. So come and see us. And we've got some good stuff coming up for the holidays. Got a bunch of new boxes of samples again today. So we're going to have some free stuff to give away. And we got a couple of big weekends coming up. Friday night, Cannabama sponsors the 251 Songwriter Sessions once a month at the Merry Widow. That's at the corner of Conception and Conti. Say that three times fast. At 7 o'clock on Friday night. Tickets are $10. You can find that on our Facebook page in the event section. And get yourself a ticket. We always have a super chill, great time. It's local singer-songwriters. They come and they just go in rounds and they sing original music. And it's always incredible to see how much musical talent there is in Mobile. And of course, Cannabama will be there with a pop-up shop, so you can sesh outside, chew a gummy, whatever you want to do, and enjoy the show. We'll have chocolates and all kinds of good stuff there. Vapes, joints, whatever you want. We always got it with us. I'm constantly pulling stuff out of my bag to people's surprise. So anyway, that'll be this Friday, the 19th, at 7 o'clock at the Merry Widow. And then the next week, of course, is Thanksgiving. We're going to have a pre-Thanksgiving sale so that you can cope with your family. And maybe we'll have a little bit of a talk next week about infusing all of your food so that no one kills anyone. And then, of course, Thanksgiving Day will be closed. But the day after Thanksgiving is Black Friday, which is usually big store shopping, you know, the mall, that kind of thing. But we do lots of fun stuff. We'll try to do our ugly sweater day and give away some free edibles that we make and have some good sales. And then, of course, the next day is bittersweet because it's Small Business Saturday and also the Iron Bowl. So, but downtown they're having a huge Iron Bowl thing. It's like a pregame. There's music and food and all kind of stuff. So we're going to try to get in on that. And we'll have the game on in the store, and we'll do some giveaways and stuff that weekend. So that's always a big weekend. So join us downtown at 558 St. Francis Street for all that fun in the next couple of weeks. Tonight, we have a special guest. Now, I for those of you who were here last week, Rob Lowry is who we talked to from Alabama Green Farms, and we had thought we had scheduled with his brother, but we had a mix-up. And anyway, so I went to the National Industrial Hemp Coalition group that I'm a part of, and I was like, hey guys, I need an emergency radio guest, and we're talking about veterans issues. And so I got super lucky within like 2 minutes. And so tonight I'm gonna introduce our guest. First of all, his real name is Daniel Jones. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jennifer.
You're so welcome. I'm so excited. So I'm just gonna read this description of who Daniel is, because we're only going to call him Daniel now. We're not going to call him Daniel after this. Okay, so Daniel Jones, a.k.a. Waxy Brown, such a great name, as he is known on his hit Cannabis Talk radio show, there's two of us, guys, there's two of us. Waxy Brown's Flower Power Hour, and he has a colorful history. He served 8 years in the U.S. Navy as a combat photojournalist and intelligence photographer, After which he did what many veterans do. He discovered cannabis and the Grateful Dead. After several years of enjoying the plant, Daniel was arrested and charged with distribution of cannabis and served 256 days in county jail while awaiting trial. Eventually, after serving 5 years on probation, Daniel successfully ran for Rolla City Council. This is in Missouri, guys. And began to advocate for cannabis decriminalization at his community level, eventually landing cannabis decriminalization in Rolla, Missouri, even after being ousted from his council seat for his cannabis felony past. That's probably a whole show in itself. Now Daniel, a.k.a. Waxy Brown, spends 2 hours a week on KKID 92.9 FM, Rolla, and a global stream discussing cannabis topics ranging from veteran access to endocannabinoid science, we know all about that, as well as a lot of radio fun. With 55,000 weekly listeners and growing, Daniel is bringing the cannabis knowledge to people via the airwaves, just like we do here at Sweet Home Cannabama. So welcome, Daniel. I'm so excited.
I'm very, very, very happy to be here, Jennifer. I have to admit, I looked into your show here, and I am just absolutely impressed. Can you hear me real good?
Yeah.
Awesome. So first, I want to talk to your listeners out there. Out here in Missouri, where things are just a little bit looser in laws, and we have a little bit more opportunity, and the discussion is wider, and probably fairly easy for me. What mm-hmm. you've done out there, Jennifer, is trailblazing in a way that no one else is. You know, I'm very blessed to live in a medicinal state that has a beautiful program with a great home grow system, great home grow program. We're allowed so much cannabis out here in Missouri, but you are down there where the fight is still very, very red hot.
Yes.
Up here, we've accomplished a lot and we've landed a lot of these planes and a lot of these birds, but where you're at, I looked into your laws, and I feel and see Alabama's struggle from here.
Oh, yeah.
And the truth is, that's not fair, is it? Because federally, we need to lift this prohibition,
right.
And we need to come to terms with what people need. And what people need are much better laws than every state has, but particularly down there, there's a lot of growth to be had. So I just really want to thank you, Jennifer, for trailblazing and for being a part of the Canna fam, because the truth is we all have an endocannabinoid system, and that makes us all part of the same tribe.
That's right.
And some of us have a better understanding of that than others, but due to education and due to folks like you who are out there really pushing this conversation, my gosh, we've gone leaps and bounds over the last decade.
It's really incredible, because when I first opened my business, CBD products, all the hemp products that I had access to, when I first tried them, absolutely changed my life. And I couldn't shut up about it. And I couldn't stop learning about it. And I knew instinctively I had to be able to teach it to people in order to reach them. And it was never going to be an easy thing. And it is the hardest thing outside of burying a child I have ever done, but it is by far the most rewarding thing I have done outside of being a mom. And part of being a mom is me showing my children. You know, I come from a history of addiction and loss and a lot of really hard things. And to be where I am today is crazy, because, you know, I'm 7 years clean as of 2 weeks ago. And so 7+ years ago, I didn't care about the future because I didn't want there to be one. And now I don't even really, it's hard for me to really put myself back in that place and remember what that really feels like, because every single day is so exciting to see, what are we going to do today? You know, what are we going to accomplish today? You know, now I'm a lobbyist. I'm on different boards and councils and coalitions, and it's just like I've met these amazing people and people like you. It's so great to know that there are other people out here doing this, because sometimes I do feel like I'm the only one.
Well, I'll tell you what. That's first off, that's awesome, all those things you just listed. But the one I want to congratulate you on is your sobriety.
Thank you.
That's such a wonderful, wonderful thing. I want to throw some numbers at you before we get this conversation started, and you let me know when it's time to take a break.
It's actually time to take a break.
All right. Because I couldn't hear your background music. You holler at me.
Okay, yeah. We'll I couldn't hear it either, but I'm getting finger signals. when we come back, we're going to pick this right back up with Waxy Brown and the Flower Power Hour. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Canabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm Jennifer Boozer, your host, and we're talking tonight to Daniel Jones, a.k.a. Waxy Brown, of the hit Cannabis Talk radio show in Missouri, Waxy Brown's Flower Power Hour. So, Mr. Waxy, I love the name Waxy. Yeah, no, I feel like... I feel like I need a cool nickname now.
I'll give you a quick rundown on the nickname. When I started changing laws in Missouri, a lot of folks kind of got upset. There was a certain amount of folks that were a little upset that we were changing drug laws.
Right.
And somebody asked me, you know, are you going to keep going out with your name and catching all this flack? And I said, you know, I'm not. I need somebody to step in here, and I need a nickname that can go out there and you know, be that while my family enjoys me back home.
Right.
And so I thought, you know what, if there was a cross between Samuel L. Jackson and Tommy Chong, and that's when Waxy Brown was
born. Oh, my God, that's amazing.
We stepped out the gate with that. But I want to go over some numbers with you real quick.
Okay.
We talk about, this is going to be kind of a serious conversation tonight, right?
Right.
We're going to talk about a lot of the bad guys in the room. When we talk about cannabinoids and what they can do, when we're talking about a non-toxic plant that's there for us, we want to talk about the bad guys in the room first.
Right.
And those bad guys, I believe, are folks like alcohol, opioids, suicide, and culture. Mm-hmm. And the culture part is the part I want to start out with.
But okay.
Let me throw some numbers at you. You've got 19 million vets in the United States of America today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 5 million of those cats that are in the United States have got at least one disability.
Wow.
Okay? 40,000 of those are homeless, most of that due to alcoholism and substance abuse.
Right.
Leading to or from mental disorders and mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
They're in Alabama. You've got 325,000 of those veterans to look out for.
Yeah.
Okay, that's 8.6% of your adult population.
Wow.
Yeah, and listen, here's where the number gets kind of high, Jennifer. Out of those 325,000 veterans, 100,000 of those, 180 of them are disabled.
Wow.
You have 340 of them who are homeless from those same issues that I was just talking about there.
Right.
So when we talk about, and I'm going to freestyle here for a second, one of the bad guys I talked about in the room is culture. And that's the one that is the most dangerous, and I do believe it is, because it's the one that the military trains us. Myself, I was a trained combat photojournalist, right? So I was trained in all the things that a sailor is going to be trained on, from fighting fires to you name it on the ship, to cook an omelet for 46 people, to, you know, shoot cameras and write stories.
Right.
And the one thing that they teach you before they teach you any of that is a culture of masculinity and drinking and fighting. And that's the first thing you learn out the gate. When you get to school, before you even start your school, you learn where the bars are. You
right.
learn where the discounts for the restaurants and bars, the ones that are going to give you that extra 5% so that you and your buddies can go drink and have it cheaper.
Right.
And that same culture, if I step into a bar in uniform, what's going to happen if I step up to that bar? People are going to buy me drinks.
Right.
You know, it's that very giving culture where it is a fraternity or you know, sorority. And it is based and filled with that kind of camaraderie where alcohol is the most prevalent, most
right.
dangerous
it's the centerpiece.
Demon in the room.
I was in a sorority, so I can relate to that. It was a lot of alcohol.
Right. And it doesn't stop during when you get out of boot camp. It's all the way through your career. I've been to 37 countries, and most of those countries, when the ship pulls up to the side there and drops us all off, we're not all running out to go take pictures of mountaintops.
Right.
We're running out to hit the bars and the pubs and basically unwind from everything we've just done for the last 3 or 4 months.
Right.
So it's a culture that's what's expected. That's what's driven into you. That's what you're trained to do. And it happens all throughout your career.
Right.
And when you get out, you know, there's no debriefing on alcoholism. They're not going to untrain you. They're not going to untrain your brain not to crave those addictions.
Right.
Your family's not going to be expected to understand the new you that comes home, because the new you that comes home isn't the one that left.
Right. It's you're traumatized. You're, you know, alienated from society, normal function, you know, normal daily life. Plus you're, you know, God knows what the vaccines they give people in the military. Between that and the alcohol and other drugs and the, you know, you hear all kind of crazy stories, you know.
Well, here's one for you. Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration has reported, and this is recently, that 37% to 50% of Afghan and Iraq veterans are diagnosed with some sort of mental health disorder.
Right. Yeah.
Now, when we talk about mental health disorders, what are we talking about with the VA? We're talking about opioids. We're talking about toxins. We're talking about pills and regimens that Western medicine has already proven it failed us time and time again.
Right.
But it's the only tools that the VA has at this time.
Right. So it's like nobody, it's like everybody knows it doesn't work, but let's just keep doing it because we're too lazy or too paid to do anything else. I don't even get the motivation to encourage you to drink so much because, I mean, what happens if you're in a combat situation and you're still drunk? You know, you don't always predict these things. I mean, how do they plan for that? That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, it's a true. I can't say in combat you're not going to have a whole lot of those kind of situations. It's the coming away from the combat. It's a month after the combat's gone,
right,
and the combat's still all that you see. It's a month after the combat, and the combat is still in that room while you're sitting with your family watching the newest Marvel movie. It doesn't go away. And then what does society teach us but that alcohol is perfectly okay for everyone to lean on? And it might not be your thing, Jennifer, but some folks, it's all they have because cannabis is not in their lives.
Right. No, it's like as you go into the military, it sounds like from what you're describing, they know you're going to need some kind of crutch or coping mechanism, and they're not going to teach you to be mentally healthy or actually help you. So they're going ahead and introducing you to what will eventually be your crutch.
That's a very, very good perspective there. You know, there's been a recent poll out of 6,500 Army vets polled. 25% of those were misusing alcohol, admittingly. Now,
yeah.
That's the ones that are going to admit
well,
it.
Well, right, and probably twice that won't admit it.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because the one thing as an addict of any sort, and alcohol is a drug, just like heroin and meth, and, you know, there's no distinction in the recovery world for sure. Because, you know, it's just as deadly and dangerous, and sometimes the withdrawal from alcohol can be worse than street drugs.
You can honestly die
from it.
There's not a lot of, when it comes to the veterans out there, there's not a lot of people screaming, hey, you know, put the bottle down. A lot of people have that sense of, look, they served our country, they should be able to do what they want, and the problem that we have there is that the culture that they're taught is going to teach them that alcohol is what they want, you know,
right,
and that lifestyle
right
is what kills veterans.
Well, two things that come to mind about that. First of all, I can remember because I became an addict after I lost my son and almost died, and it was incredibly traumatic. And people would say to my face, I don't blame you. I would do drugs too. So I used that as justification for a long time. Like, if ever there was an excuse, I have it. And I came to realize when I got clean, there is none. There's none. There's no excuse, you know, to use something like that. It's never okay. And yet here's the government almost introducing you to your drug of choice, which is crazy. But one other thing I was reading recently, alcohol is the only drug that when you say no thank you, people ask you, why don't you do it? You know, if somebody offers you heroin and you say no, they're not going to go, well, why? Why don't you do heroin? You know, but with alcohol, they, oh, what, are you pregnant? Or, you know, what is the deal? Like, they're peer pressuring you because everybody drinks, you know? Well, and I think that's crazy. It's the only drug that I can think of that when you refuse it or say, no, thanks, I don't drink, people want to ask why. They you know, it's a bizarre thing.
Yeah, it's true. You know, the history of Prohibition is a wild thing. It's a true story that Henry Anslinger and those cats, they decided in 1937 after alcohol prohibition lifted that they had to find a way to get that income. Mm-hmm. And the only way to get that they could see was to prohibit cannabis. And,
right.
And this is what we're left with, is a culture, a society that has been our the American culture itself. When you think America, you're thinking apple pie and Budweiser. Let's not pretend anything different.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's just real, and the apple pies aren't even around so much anymore.
Right.
You know, it's
right.
It's
a beer company sponsor football and all that good stuff. Racing, race car driving, that's the craziest thing. Let's let the alcohol people sponsor that. You know, it's like let's drive around in a circle really fast and here's a Budweiser commercial. You know,
yeah.
And that's a big deal down here in Alabama.
Yeah, you know, it's a true story too. That if you really wanted to get into those conversations, those are whole other shows that we could have. We talk
Absolutely.
About the sports world and how much the sports world needs cannabis. You know, those drivers. Let's be real. I'm going to say it out loud, and you guys should look into this. Consumption does not mean impairment. You know, we've got plenty of people
right.
in this United States that can't get behind the wheel of a car without cannabis.
That's
you know,
right.
Such as
I agree with that.
Parkinson's, yeah, MS.
Yep. All right. When we come back, we're going to pick back up with Waxy Brown of the Flower Power Hour. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Booser.
All right, welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm Jennifer, your host, and we're talking tonight to Waxy Brown, who has a cannabis talk show on FM radio in Rolla, Missouri. So, Waxy, back to what we're... I just feel silly calling you Waxy.
Well, I don't feel silly, man. That's the name. Let's wear it out.
That's why I need, like, a pimped out... stinking name. I need my listeners to find me a nickname. What comes to mind when y'all think of me? I'll probably, I know I have a couple of fans. I have a couple of fans out there that would have some choice words, but that's okay. We pray for them. So you were talking about culture and alcohol. So I'd like to get back to that and see what your next point would be, because it's fascinating. You and I think very much alike.
Very good. So I could definitely talk a little bit more about alcohol. Let's talk. I was listening to your show, it was yesterday's show, and he did bring up PTSD quite a bit.
Right.
And I do want to point out a statistic here. So 8 in 10 of the vets seeking PTSD treatment, that's 8 in 10 that are seeking PTSD treatment, have alcohol abuse issues.
Yeah.
So when we talk about PTSD, we talk about the number one most abused toxin out there in the veteran community, and that's alcohol. Alcohol and PTSD do ride hand in hand. So,
right.
It also goes like this. Can you imagine a scenario where you went into combat and you didn't bring home some kind of post-traumatic stress disorder from that?
I can't imagine.
I served, and I served around a lot of great people, and there's not very many people that walk away from those kind of scenarios without a whole lot of baggage.
Right.
But kind of the cool part about that is that we all also have an endocannabinoid system.
Right.
And that's, and as I'm sure your listeners are aware, that's your master control regulator.
Right.
Throughout your body, that's going to help you deal with issues like that. Let's bring on a real serious topic real quick. Have you guys talked about the number 22 on your show?
We have. We've mentioned it several times. Yes.
Okay. So that's what our reported veteran suicide rate is daily in the United States of America.
Right.
Now, after everything we've talked about so far in your show today, do you think that number is accurate?
No. Not if all the rest of the stats are correct. No.
I mean, so if we add in alcohol, we add in opioid death, we add overdoses, alcoholism, the whole culture mixed in with it, I believe that that number is going to be at least double that.
At least, yeah.
And that's scary for any kind of population, especially when you're talking about there's 19 million veterans in the United States of America who 84% of them support cannabis legalization and access for veterans.
Right.
So
at the very
the
least
VA
for veterans and cancer patients.
Listening to the very people that
right.
they're asking us to hold on the pedestal, high esteem. These are the folks that if they want, we'll let them drown in that bottle because they served our country and that's what they choose to do, and that should be how it is.
No, it's a crime against those people to me to let them languish in that helpless, horrible place. And I know what a flashback feels like. I know what it feels like to no longer be where you are and be somewhere where it just shuts you down and you're weeping uncontrollably in public. I know what that's like. And I can't imagine in some of the violent and injurious situations that these soldiers are facing that it's 10 times worse than what I experienced. And to let them just deal with it and say, oh, well, they can do whatever they want. We're not going to bother them about it. It's like they don't want to. It's like they're doing them a favor by not treating them like addicts, you know, because they were a soldier and they earned that or something. What? They earned the right to kill themselves slowly.
Well,
it's six.
They're given a recipe to do it as well. You know, that's part of the junky part about all this is that there just is an avenue directly to the end of your life as a veteran, and it's not good. And so when we think about that, let's think about how we can help that situation for a minute, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's as cannabis activists and advocates out there, the one thing that we scream out is exit drug strategy, right?
Yes.
So when
yes.
we talk about the exit drug strategy, we know that it works. Now here's the weird part, right? So everything that we have so far is anecdotal because federal criminalization, federal prohibition, doesn't allow us to go get the research we need to be able to prove these numbers that we know are correct as advocates and activists.
Right.
So we know that when dispensaries hit in any community, when a dispensary door opens, a medical dispensary door, you have a 30% or more drop in opioid deaths in that area.
Right.
Now, in an adult use market, which is, a lot of people like say that recreational word. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm
right.
talking about what you talk about on your show, which is adult use, 21 and up, treat it like alcohol, things like that.
So right. When you can walk into a store and buy it without a medical card.
Even more in those mm-hmm. situations.
Yeah. Well, I know my first of all, my drug of choice was opiates, and I work with a lot of addicts because it's my personal thing, and I have firsthand knowledge after 3+ years of donating oil to women in recovery and watching them get just light years ahead of where I was white knuckling it on my own for the first 3 years. And see these women not struggle with withdrawal and cravings, see them sleeping and not going nuts because every cell in their body's on fire and screaming for meth or alcohol or heroin or pills or whatever. It's incredible. So I personally have a ton of anecdotal evidence, and that's the driving force behind my ability and my desire to donate it for free, because I want to see these women have an advantage that I didn't have. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. It is 1,000% effective. And I have not met an addict that who wanted to get clean and used it correctly that didn't have wild success.
And so, we want to at least give people the opportunity. You know, with the Veterans Administration, it's a weird scenario for me because they spend billions on those drugs that they're giving out. And don't get me wrong, the Veterans Administration has dialed back its medication, the amount that it gives over mm-hmm. the last decade, almost 45%.
Yeah.
Obviously still not enough.
Right.
But that we can't have an exit drug strategy, like we call it the exit drug, but we can't have an exit drug strategy without federal prohibition repealing, which it's in the process of as we speak.
Right.
The Veterans Administration is going to be the first federal entity, I believe, to embrace cannabis inside its walls.
Right.
Just hopefully we can build a bridge before we get there that allows them to do that. Because if we allow the VA to try and look at what you're dealing with in Alabama, it's taking a long time to implement a program.
Right.
If we leave it in the VA's hands, we're going to have issues.
Right.
There's companies out there that need to step forward with this technology and these telehealth programs, and they need to step in, and the VA needs to allow cannabinoids into their health system, not just their health system, but also their mental health system.
Right.
There is so much good to be done with this plant, and it is going to be, we're going to be able to ramp up research very quickly with this. And as we do that, hopefully the Veterans Administration, which has shown reluctance so far, will be the first entity out the gate to allow this kind of research inside our governmental facilities.
Right. I don't know how, as an empath, I don't know how people who work within the VA, I don't know how they work there every day and see these men and women come in completely broken and completely shattered and completely dependent on one thing or another or a bunch of things and still so miserable. Because I know I experienced suicidal ideation for years as a result of my addiction. And that's on top of the PTSD and the mental health issues that created this scenario that made me become an addict. But just that hopelessness of feeling like, okay, I've tried to get off before and it's like every cell in my body is on fire. And all my brain can think is, God, please make it stop. And this is my life now. And I don't want to live like this. That's on its own enough to drive you to suicide. And then you add in the violence and the injuries and the limit and let's talk about it. People who've had their arms or legs blown off, people who have brain injuries that will never be fixed. You know, those are huge obstacles to overcome on top of the addiction and that mindset that bondage that your brain and your body is under. It's just a crushing weight. And it's no wonder that whether they shoot themselves in the VA parking lot or they, you know, drink themselves to death, they're all, I mean, that's why you're probably right about the number being at least double, because just because it wasn't accomplished all at one time doesn't mean these people aren't killing themselves. You know, they're killing themselves. It's just taking a little longer because it's one day at a time. We had a guy, a tragic situation. And I don't know anything about him, whether or not he was military or not, but I know he was an alcoholic. And this guy was in horrible shape and probably once a week had an ambulance called. And he would call the ambulance himself, and it was so hard to watch. And one day my employees called, and it was my son. He was 19 at the time, and he was like, Mom, we just heard this loud noise above us. This guy died. And he, like, passed out and aspirated and died from alcohol. And I was like, I can't say that I'm surprised, you know, because it was like he was determined to drink himself to death. And I think that happens a lot more in the veteran community than people really realize.
Well, sure. I mean, if the math is correct, we've lost a veteran while we were speaking on your show today to suicide.
I'm sure.
I mean, that's real. And you, did you need to take a break?
I think we got a few more seconds here.
Okay, because I'm gonna talk about something real quick here. And you asked in the beginning of that question there, you said, I don't know how those folks could work and see that every day. And I just want to point out that that's the shame of our society that we have now, mm-hmm. which is that Western medicine has gone the wrong direction.
Right.
And that there's just no, if you were to go into that doctor's, into that VA system out there in Alabama right now, and you went up to 10 of those healthcare workers and you asked them about their endocannabinoid system,
none of them could answer
you. Are going to know what you're talking about.
Right, right.
Does your dentist know what you're talking about?
No, not at all.
Many healthcare workers do because they've been trained and taught otherwise
right.
since the very beginning.
Let's come back in just a minute and finish this topic. We'll be back with Waxy Brown.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Canabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
All right, everybody. We're here for the last segment of Sweet Home Canabama tonight, and we're talking with Waxy Brown, who has a talk radio show about cannabis in Missouri. I want to make sure that we drive home the point that cannabis would greatly improve these situations we've been talking about. You know, PTSD begets addiction and homelessness and all those other things that we've been talking about. And so, you know, we were just talking about cannabis as an exit drug strategy for alcohol and opioids. But, I mean, even antipsychotics and antidepressants and things like that. I mean, I got off of all that stuff. Even though I was clean, I was still on antidepressants, anxiety meds, blood pressure meds, and sleep meds, and still had insomnia. And that changed overnight for me. So I my radio rep here was, and I mentioned this last week, she was telling me about her nephew and how when he came back, you know, he was on all these meds and he was not the same person and he was miserable. And when he lives in Florida, which is a legal state, and now he is off all those meds and purely uses cannabis. And it struck me when she said, and we got him back. Because
that's powerful.
He was gone. And I can relate to that because I was too. A lot of people that I meet now, they can't imagine me as a suicidal, you know, just depressed drug addict. And granted, I was pretty vanilla. I didn't party. I didn't go to jail or rehab or anything like that. I was a suburban, you know, minivan driving mom. But I was numb all the time. But I was just like, I didn't care. I did not care.
That strikes home the normalization of opioid abuse and all these toxins. And it's not just, it's not just, I hate to be so raw about it, but it's not just your junkie on the street.
Right.
It is your soccer moms. It is your politicians. It is your 1% down to your 99. It's every single person walking on this earth that as long as there's billion-dollar companies trying to introduce us to these toxins, we're going to have these issues. And here's what's real. We have an endocannabinoid system. We don't have an endo-opioid system. These folks have mm-hmm. tricked and trained Western medicine to trap us into this nasty, toxic environment that what they call our healthcare has become.
Right, and really, it's
just
symptom drugging. I mean, what part of conventional medicine or in med school do they not teach you that it doesn't matter if your toe is broken? Whatever you take for that affects every cell in your body. It affects your brain chemistry, your immune system, your hormone function, all of it. You know, you can't just treat your toe.
Okay, well, and you're right. And so, and that's why the veterans are in such dire need, because they're the ones that, I mean, we're destroying them.
Right.
Let's talk about CBD for just a quick second mm-hmm. and culture. Let's go back to culture, right? So, and here's what's really cool about what you're doing down there in Alabama. In the United States of America, 14% of folks 18 to 28% are using cannabis.
Right.
Now here's what's real. In the United States, 22% of those of that age group is using CBD on the daily.
Right.
CBD is that entrance. It's the entrance drug. It's the one that you're seeing on the FM, the AM. You're seeing it from everybody's shows, from Howard Stern to Rush Limbaugh. Everybody's got it on every network. It's
right.
For sale to support churches. It's on the Walmart shelves. That's the one that's really opened the door. And here's what's really important. THC is awesome, Jennifer, but your show, I'm sure, has taught everybody that the other cannabinoids, the ensemble effect, the entourage, that's all just as important.
Absolutely.
When you talk about senior citizens and veterans, one of the things that we talk about the most are gut issues, things going on inside that system that's been torn up by toxins.
In the second CBG, brain, yep.
CBG is the answer for that.
Yep.
You know, when you talk about, when we talk about you can't get rest or there's things going through your head that you need to get rid of, sure, THC is great. But CBD is where you can find a whole lot of that rest.
Right, and CBN. CBN's really great too.
Let's you know, let's say you're not feeling so up and you're not feeling so great. You know, you don't have to run to THC Delta 9. THCV is around the corner.
That's right.
That energy will be there for us. The cannabinoids are marching into this world in full step. And Western medicine, as you can see from the numbers of prescriptions dropping and cannabis exploding across the United States, Big Pharma's being chased away. And Big Canna is the new face.
Well, and thank God for social media. I hate to say that almost because Facebook drives me nuts. But I'm dependent on it because I have a business. And it is a good medium to get the message out. But thank God for social media because we can tell our anecdotal stories.
That's
you know?
Right. I'm supporting a new social media platform called AmConnect, and it is the answer to social media and friendliness to cannabis. Social media itself, the hostility it's showing.
Oh, man. Tell me about it.
Ridiculous.
I spent about 60 out of the last 120 days in Facebook jail. 30 days in Facebook jail is rough on the sales because the information's not getting out. You have to constantly put out information because there's so much bad information. And
here's another bit of information that I think people are going to have a little trouble with going forward. We've got to get this federal legalization landed because the one of the things that veterans are having such a hard time with, they won't go get those cannabis cards.
Right.
And you want to know why, Jennifer? Gun rights. It becomes one of the worst issues that states have to deal with.
Right.
So
you can keep
you
your gun when you're
in
drunk.
Alabama,
yeah.
Make sure that stays in the conversation, that you have to protect gun rights. Because
your
veterans, we don't put our guns down just because we left our, you know, conflict.
Right. But which would you rather have? Would you rather have someone with severe PTSD who's on alcohol and pills that has a weapon or a mentally stable former sufferer of those things who uses cannabis and is nonviolent because their brain chemistry is balanced and no weapon? I mean, come on. Give me the guy who's mentally healthy, balanced, and using cannabis over the alcohol and the pills every day. Every day.
And this conversation is going to become much more focused and in focus, and people are going to understand it better as this information gets out.
Right.
So, brilliant to you and your team for getting this information out to the folks of Alabama, because the truth is this isn't just a plant that we roll up in a joint and we sing Cottonmouth King songs and worship Willie Nelson.
Right.
This plant is here to save our society from the toxins and the lies and the garbage that these big pharma and these cats have shown us. And I'll tell you another thing. It's not just big pharma that we're up against. It's big oil. It's big plastic. It's big everything.
Big tobacco.
When you look around your homes, almost everything there can be made with hemp.
That's
when
right.
When you look at the buildings can be made with hemp.
Yes.
Plywood, concrete can be hempcrete. All these things, we can come through and we can not only save the world, we could save everything. We can save the veterans, the jobs. We can build a better society. Just everybody needs to relax and understand that we need better laws than just a gelatin cube of gummy and a suppository.
Right.
We need our plant 100% there, no restriction.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I know everybody that's listening knows exactly what you're referring to because the gelatinous cube and the suppositories have been fodder for a lot of jokes and a lot of complaining.
Listen, we're in the United States of America. In the United States of America, we use cannabis. It's a true story. And you can look at what the sweeping green tsunami that's going across the United States of America right now. And you can't tell me that in Alabama, your government wants to miss out on the biggest billion-dollar industry, the biggest new market, the biggest researchable, scientific, there for everything. They don't want a piece of that, too?
Right. It's That's weird. What makes no sense. But here, we don't like anything but football.
Well,
I'm just
going
to tell
you. We're the only people out there that want to pay the biggest tax on the world. We are not afraid to pay for all cannabis. We've proven that. With here in Missouri, we've already sold over $100 million worth of cannabis in our first little go out here.
Wow!
You look at $1 billion sales across the board everywhere. We've got I believe we're a lot bigger than that now. But this market, this new product, this new relief of prohibition is here to save our industries, our society, and our lives.
Thank you so much, Waxy. We've got to go. We're out of time. We'll see you next week on Sweet Home Cannabama. Good night.